Mike Gasowitz, CEO of Tricert Financial Group. Welcome to another episode of In Focus. Today, I'm joined by Joel Baker, our Chief Investment Officer. Welcome, Joel.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on. Today, we're going to talk about first quarter, call it an investment overview. But before we do that, we just recently had a new federal budget or an updated federal budget, which sadly had, I can't help my opinion here, sadly had repercussions for a lot of us, for most of us, really, in terms of capital gains and changes on the inclusion rate. And so maybe, Joel, why don't we just first start there before we turn our discussion to the markets. You know, you're meeting with clients. Maybe talk about some of those conversations and the accountants and what we're going to try and do for them.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. No, that's a biggie for sure. Just how you said it affects a lot of our clients and especially a lot of the tax planning that goes on, you know, with our accountants. So it's a biggie for sure. And yeah, to your question, we've had a lot of meetings recently and going to be a lot more meetings happening. So for the clients out there, we will be reaching out with some planning ideas to run past them. But in a nutshell, really what's happened is the capital gains inclusion rate is what they call it has been increased. And it's, you know, it's terrible timing. I hate to say it that way, but just dealing with accountants from an April 30th perspective, plus the window's a bit short to boot. So again, we don't have a lot of time. So it's kind of all hands on deck on this particular topic for sure. But yeah, in a nutshell, it's basically a threshold increase. And for clients that are holding personal investments, there's still a little bit of a window as far as a rate that they can have capital gains up to a certain threshold. But if held in like a corporate account or what we call a holding company, that threshold disappears. Right. So again, there's a lot of planning with regards to capital gains, just period. There could be some outside gains going on. Could be some cottage sales happening. Even a couple of examples come to mind where clients had business sales happening. So all of that's now in jeopardy as far as timing and planning around that timing. And yeah, at the end of the day, it's very, very good meetings going on with our accountants and our clients. And yeah, it's just a great integration aspect to our model, as we all know, but very, very key meetings going on around this topic.
Yeah, and to your point and the integration in terms of our organization alongside the accountants. First of all, in terms of timing, correct me wrong, like corporate clients, they have until the end of June. Is that correct? In terms
June 20th, yeah, June 25th, correct, yeah.
Oh, it's June 25th, okay.
Yeah, that's the window, yeah.
And so that's the window. And so to your point, we've put together a tiger team in terms of getting the right information into the hands of the accountants so that they can do that tax planning to try and optimize situation here. So
just some proactive planning. That's the way, exactly. Simple way to say it, Mike, for sure. Yeah.
So unfortunate situation. I will park my political leanings in this podcast. I will not get into it in terms of the sanity or lack of sanity in terms of the policy change, but, but why don't we move on and talk about the market? So the first quarter, what did it look like?
We continue to be volatile so far, Mike. I know we've talked about that in the last few podcasts of expecting volatility. And so far, 2024 has continued on with that. And so, yeah, to your question, after the end of the first quarter, so end of March, if you will, you know, bonds were relatively flat. In the Canadian market, maybe I'll use that in context to the outside markets, but we lagged the U.S. market and we lagged the international market. However, April has shown volatility the opposite way. So to kind of give you a sense, so in April alone, bonds are down across the board. The Canadian market has actually outperformed the U.S. market and the international market. But having said that, it's still a slightly decrease as far as performance, but it's outperformed. So all that to say, the U.S. market has been volatile, whipping back in April, whereas it was gaining in March year to date. So that teeter tottering, if that continues, Mike, you know, we sort of see the U.S. is dominated by the Magnificent Seven. I'm sure we'll talk about that today, but that continues to sort of, you know, bode well for the U.S. strength, but it's whipsawed in April. So that's the sector that's actually tailed off or pared back in April to date. Whereas the utilities have sort of offered the opposite. So it's almost a teeter-totter effect, if you will, going on.
So before we dive then into the, as you said, the Magnificent Seven and talk about what we're seeing on that front, I just, you know, we've, in a few of our podcasts, we've talked about prefs, and that's what stood out for me in the first quarter. Prefs bounced back pretty nicely.
Yeah, they were very strong, actually. Yeah, they were very strong. Drilling down a wee bit, maybe is a simple way to say that, Mike. That index that we use to sort of gauge preferred shares, there's a lot of bank preferred shares in there and a lot of one specific type of preferred shares called resets. And I'm sure we've all heard talking about reset preferreds, but the banks have been aggressively calling that specific class back. So therefore the index has got a lift, if you will, in terms of that. And our preferreds have participated in that, no doubt about it. The other side of that coin is I really think they were beaten up too much last year. So they offered some really strong dividend yields. I think the market was sort of ignoring that, for lack of a better term. And the fact that now we're talking about an environment where rates go down, those dividend yields look really, really strong. Right. So I think it's just kind of maybe common sense coming back into the asset class, which wasn't there mid last year.
Speaking of sanity again.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep.
So let's turn down to the States and the S&P 500. And yes, we've spoken several times about the Magnificent Seven. So talk about that and the latest on that front.
Sure. You really can't talk about the American market, Mike, without talking about that. So the Magnificent Seven, they continue to be dominant within the space, but less dominant. So for example, Mike, if we look at last year's returns in 2023, it was basically three quarters of the return was in seven names. So that's how dominant they were. So far in 2024, it's about double. So they're outperforming the rest of the stocks by about 2-to-1 margin instead of the 3-to-1 margin. So it's still a dominance, but not quite as bad as it was, or quite as steep as it was, I should say. But yeah, the focus on the Magnificent Seven, it's almost turned into what they're calling now a Fabulous Four outlook. Right. And so really what that's referring to is four of the seven names have actually hit all-time highs in 2024. So the focus is now drilling down further into the four names as opposed to the seven names. But I know that's hard to digest. So if we kind of, you know, go back one step just to kind of put the whole thing in context. So even looking at last year, about 26% of the earnings were from those names, but yet they represented over a third of the market in terms of market cap. So you just kind of gets a sense of how dominant they were. Maybe even overpriced is the way to say that, in context of how they actually fit into the U.S. market.
Right.
Pretty eye-opening for sure. Yep.
So speaking of the market then, and again, sticking in the U.S., so in terms of market cycles, what are we looking at here? You know, compared to the long-term average in looking at it, say, from a forward price-to-earnings ratio, how are we standing right now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike. Again, maybe I can continue on with that technology sort of focus there. So again, we try to look at it in context of the total market, and we try to peel those seven names out just to see what do things look like, X the Magnificent Seven. So to answer your question, if you look at the broader market, it's trading at about 21 times in terms of a price earnings ratio, they call it. Longer term averages is about 17 times. Again, I'll just use round numbers here for our discussion. But if you drill down and look at the Magnificent Seven, they're running about 28 times, which means the other 493 companies are about 18 times.
Right.
So if you look at the broader market, it's kind of in sync, if you will, Mike, with those longer term averages. It's a little bit above, but it's reasonable. It's just that this, again, dominance of the seven names is pushing that up to bands that are quite expensive when you look at the 30-year averages, whether it be where the market is or some of the ratios or price to earnings, things like that. So it's really is dominant for sure in terms of the S&P context.
It's a good way to look at it as well, just to make sure, you know, just again, back to understanding the cycle. We've got these seven or now maybe the four dominating, but if you strip those out, we're in a reasonable market cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to comment on that, Mike, again, one of the things we always talk about in client meetings is those companies, they're very strong, very dominant company. No doubt about it. They're high quality names. They're just not cheap to purchase or cheap to chase, to use that phrase. So that's sort of the issue there is at what point do they become a reasonable valuation that you continue on buying them in the portfolio? So you want some exposure, but you want a reasonable exposure as well.
Exactly. So let's compare, you know, so if we look at the Canadian market and then maybe the what's called the EAFE, that's Europe, Asia, and the Far East, how are those markets, you know, pricing in compared to the U.S.?
Yeah, great question, Mike. It's one thing we look at all the time. So if you sort of look at it from a higher level perspective, again, just using that P.E. ratio that I mentioned. So the American market, like I said, was about 21 times. Actually, Canada and the EAFE market, which represents international markets, they're basically the exact same level at 14 times. Okay. So again, 14 times compared to 21, or like I said before, if you stripped out that dominance of the seven names, it's about 14 times compared to more like 17 times.
All right.
So the U.S. market's still a little bit more expensive than non-U.S. markets, but much, much more in line if you sort of, you know, look at it from that dominant seven names being sort of excluded from the valuations.
Why don't we shift to interest rates and our income producing side of the portfolio? Obviously, inflation is one of the, call it the causes that's driving inflation rate, the interest rates to be increased as quickly as they were that we saw in the past. I guess let's start there. How is the fight on the inflation front?
Yeah, and that's probably the number one thing we talk about in client meetings, Mike, is in interest rates and where are they headed and have we peaked and all of that fun stuff. So yeah, just to kind of drill down on that a little bit. So if we look at the consensus estimates as of today, they're still predicting rates to fall. But what has changed, Mike, since you and I spoke last on one of these podcasts is they've pushed out the timing of when the cuts start to happen. So again, if we sort of look at data as of yesterday, the consensus estimates are that the U.S. market will drop their interest rates by about 43 basis points, and that's out to the end of January. And again, if you look at the statistics, they're basically estimating that the cuts start in the September meeting.
Okay.
And compare that to Canada, the estimates are our interest rates falling about 55 basis points by the end of the calendar year, so by the end of 2024. And again, time frames are that starts in the July meeting. Put that in context. Now, when we were chatting before, I think the market had priced in cuts starting by now. So in the spring meeting, we'd start to see that fall. I must admit, those probably change every 2 weeks, Mike, as far as what those probabilities look like and the statistics and what they look like. But that's what we're looking at today as far as interest rates probabilities in terms of going forward. But
okay. As we talk, look at, say, the economic indicators looking forward, I guess one item that is the yield curve. What does the yield curve look like? It's been inverted for some time. And
that's a great question. So yeah, we remain inverted here in Canada, both in Canada and the U.S., I should say it that way. But to your point, it really remains inverted due to inflation. So we talked about that just a second ago. And inflation is basically coming in, Mike, at what the central bankers or the Fed, all eyes are on the Fed. So maybe I'll just focus on that. It's coming into where their band thinks it should be, but it's not quite there yet. So that's why the camp is out as to do they really start to need to lower interest rates as much as what they thought if inflation hasn't been tamed yet or do we have inflation under control yet? So the camp's out as to whether we're there yet as opposed to that's happened. So therefore we shouldn't need to lower rates until we have that in check. And so that's kind of what's going on there. It flows right into your point though of an inverted yield curve. And why we care about that, just to sort of remind our viewers, is that that is a very good indicator, has a very strong history of predicting a recession. And to your point, if we sort of look at the data, Mike, it hasn't been the steepest or the deepest inversion history that we've seen. That goes back to the early 80s. And some of our viewers will remember that ugly time in terms of that deep recession. Some of our viewers will remember reading about that ugly time in terms of that deep recession. But that was sort of the deepest or the steepest inversion period. But interestingly enough, our current environment has the longest inversion. So to your point, we're coming up on 2 years here of having an inverted yield curve. So interesting to say, like we might be setting some history books here in terms of setting new records based on our inverted yield curve, especially if we don't head into recession. We might be writing the record books here in terms of new statistics.
But taking that into account and not looking to necessarily predict what's going to happen on the economic front, but if you do look at the indicators, you know, what are they saying from an expansion neutral or recessionary perspective when you kind of step through all the indicators that we watch?
Yeah, and I wish it was very clear, Mike, to be honest. So there's good news and bad news in this, and I'll explain what I mean by that. So if we look at those indicators, and especially the leading indicators, the good news is that we're trending the right way now. So we've kind of coming off this rock bottom, if you will, Mike, and trending up the right way. So that's the good news story. The bad news is we're still on sort of a negative territory. So we're not in this sort of wipe the sweat off your brow kind of environment. You know, one of the things I always talk about is it's kind of a pleasure sitting in my chair. I get to deal with a lot of clients in a lot of different industries. And so you get to hear what's on the street as far as what they see in their everyday businesses. And we're starting to hear, Mike, of slowdowns and even some clients using the words like significant slowdowns. So that's coming off the heels of them having record years and record years. So I guess it's just in the air that there is maybe a changing of the tide here as far as the economy, and there is a chance of going into a recession. You know, back to your actual question, though, the indicators are looking like there is less of a chance of a recession. So it's even though it's still neutral, I'll kind of use that word loosely, but it's still kind of mixed data to make you think it's a neutral outlook. But it seems like there's less chance of a recession based on the indicators being updated as we speak. So that's the good news, bad news sort of story. So Drilling down into the market, that's always the second question. So what all does that mean, Joel, in terms of the stock market? And again, it really is sort of a, you know, a mixed bag, if you will. So we're in the neutral camp. We're still playing that defensive stance. You've heard me say that a few times. We don't see that flashing green light as far as stocks being the place to be right now. So we're still playing that diversified approach, to use that sports analogy, more defense than offense, until some of those indicators, you know, tell us otherwise. But it really is a neutral outlook on the stock market based on what the leading indicators are telling us from an economic perspective.
Makes sense. Joel, thanks for this.
Okay, anytime.
Folks, as always, if you have any questions, especially, you know, we opened up the podcast talking about the capital gains changes and how it can affect you. Any questions on that front, don't hesitate to reach out to your financial advisor at your CPA firm. Don't hesitate to reach out to your portfolio manager. And as always, feel free to reach out to myself. Take care.